Hello, hello, hello. Welcome to another episode of the Linux Lads. I am always as Shane. Who are you guys?
I am Mike.
I'm Connor.
And we are the Linux Lads. It's good to be back. January. I hope everyone's nicely stuffed, full of turkey and things that are bad for them. Mike, what did you get up to over the holidays?
Oh, I've been up to many a thing, but most recently I've installed PopOS on my work PC and Strayed GNOME on my Arch install, and I'll be talking about that in a little while.
Nice. Connor?
Not much at all. And just so we were doing our own version of the Ubuntu podcast going off for curry, we went over to Mike's house for fondue, so that might be our thing.
It's maybe classier.
Yeah, yes, you guys are always welcome back.
So, I think we'll move it swiftly along, segueing, as always, even into 2019. So, first on the agenda, GNOME, PopOS. Mike, you mentioned that.
So, everybody knows me as a fanatical user of KDE who will never, ever stray from the path. And that's exactly what I did. I went too bored one day and just decided to reinstall my work PC, install PopOS, which is Ubuntu 18.10 with a customized version of GNOME on the top. It looks really good from the box, out of the box. It is aimed at developers by the people who make the System 76 laptops and desktops over in the United States. Is as a workstation, it's really nice. It kind of has got the GNOME vibe where you get into the zone and you just start working and you do your own thing and the system gets out of your way. Having said that, it has got a few GNOME specific snags as well. So, out of the box, I don't remember if I had to install it or if it was there, but basically, and I think Connor had spoken about this before in a previous episode, GNOME is basically useless without the top icons plus extension for me, because you can't see status icons. You can't see if somebody, you know, you can't see your Telegram icon and you can't see your Mattermost icon. So if that wasn't there, that would be a big problem for me. And that's an extension. And it's no longer maintained either, because the developer, I think, got really annoyed at the way GNOME was forcing him to work. So he just quit. And that's possibly the worst thing about it. There are a few things that are GNOME specific, like that. If you want to have the normal three buttons on the top of the screen, that's also an extension. Otherwise, that's just the close down button. But that's a design choice. I get that. The same for icons on the desktop that I think are actually there by default, because System 76 installed some extensions by default. So this might be there, and it's not in stock GNOME. But I get all those design choices where basically they are saying, well, we think that this is how people would like to work. That's why we are doing it this way, with the exception of those top icon of those status bar icons, because that's, I don't think it's usable without it. I hit some dual monitor troubles where, because one of them is a VGA and the other one is a DisplayPort, even though one is at its primary, it thinks that the other one is turned on first or something. So there's a bit of a problem with switching, but I think I'm on going to sort that out. The nice things, I really like the way it's integrated. If you have got a Google Drive, as I have to have for work, you just type your password into GNOME and it will mount the drive as a webdav, I think. The same for Nextcloud. You can install the Nextcloud app, but you can also just use from GNOME files or aka Nautilus. You can use it as a network mount. It's really beautiful, with the exception of Firefox. For some reason, some forms are dark letters on dark background. So I don't know. That doesn't work very well, but everything else is pretty good. I've been talking for 5 minutes. Maybe somebody else should. Otherwise, this will be really boring.
No, what I was going to say is just a couple of points that you have raised. Yeah, the top icons plus for legacy icons is definitely a necessity. There is a handy thing on GNOME, which is the online accounts. So it's just one place you log into online accounts. It will say, if you want to log into your Google account, if you want to log into your Nextcloud account, if you want to log into your Microsoft or Exchange account or whatever, you literally bang in your username and password in there, and then your calendar is synced to whatever that account is, whether it's your Nextcloud account or your Google account or your Microsoft account. Is your calendar, your mail, all of that just get all with the default apps. So that's quite useful. Anytime that I had been using GNOME in the past, and I was like, because we do have Nextcloud ourselves, where we kind of share files amongst ourselves or documents and that sort of thing. And quite recently, I was trying out Ubuntu 18.04, Ubuntu 18.10 actually, which is GNOME by default. And then I was like, online accounts, Nextcloud, I'll try this. And I just logged in with my Nextcloud account. And then there, right there and then in Nautilus, it just mounted. And I was like, oh, this is kind of cool. I like that design choice. But yeah, certain things that you kind of have to de-gnomify it or de-gnomify some of their choices, and it Pop OS and the Ubuntu team in Canonical do some of those little things just to make it more user friendly. The vanilla GNOME I don't really like.
Yeah, but it's a bit telling that both of these organizations choose to add some extension. They also install the GNOME tweak, and definitely in PopOS, and I think in Stock Ubuntu it's also installed by default, because otherwise you have not many customization options.
GNOME tweak is not installed by default in Ubuntu, as far as I'm aware.
Oh, okay. But it is on PopOS, and
listeners, feel free to correct me on that, but that's my understanding.
So it is on one side, I understand it, I get it. Like, I actually started using GNOME at work because I was watching somebody giving a presentation on their macOS device, or macOS 10X, whatever. And I was just looking at the screen, and the person was controlling the computer with what I can just describe as grace, because it's just there. It's so easy to manipulate the windows, and everything is on there. So I was thinking, well, GNOME always felt that way. So, that's why I switched. And to the most part, it definitely feels that way. And just like macOS 10, there are things that they won't let you customize, and that there are also things that you think that should be working differently, and they are just not gonna, because it's just like OS X, it's an opinionated desktop environment.
Yeah, so this is what I have been up to. I've got a brand new microphone, which you're listening to me on at the moment, the audio interface. I was having intermittent, sometimes it would work, sometimes it wouldn't work, under any kind of Linux, whether it's Ubuntu, Andragos, whatever, with the interface, and then troubleshooting, and then off their website they just said Windows driver. So, and I was spent hours trying to troubleshoot it. So I kind of gave up and started dual booting just for the sake of, I was like, this is my new microphone, this is my new toy, I want to try it out. So at the moment, yes, I am using the Devil Spawn OS coming from Redmond, Washington, to record this at the moment. But it from somebody who I use Windows 10 at work, but obviously I prefer to use Linux as my main operating system. So coming from a Linux user's point of view, how did I find the Windows 10? My approach to Windows 10. So obviously I did a brand new install. Some people who get it as part of their OEM install might have a different experience than this. This was me, complete wipe. So during the installation, it obviously heavily encourages you to sign in with a Microsoft account. But if you go to the bottom left, I believe there, you kind of have to dig through it. It's not immediately obvious, but there is a way of doing an offline local only account. Strongly suggest you do that. That means that most of the metrics are not being sent off because it's not an online Microsoft account. During the installation, he's like, do you want to do the Express install or Advanced? I strongly recommend you do the Advanced install. And then you're literally going, no, 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 toggling off loads of shit. Next. No, 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 next. No, 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 next. And then as soon as you have your brand new desktop, your start menu is absolutely massive. It's half of it is filled up with freaking Candy Crush and Xbox freaking live tiles and weather, I suppose, is useful. But it's, so the first thing I do is like just go in, and it takes a while, but it can be done. You just go in, just right click on all of those live tiles, what they call them, and just go right click, unpin from start menu, right click, unpin from start menu. There's about freaking 25 of them by default, but if you do that, the start menu shrinks down completely and is much, much easier. Candy Crush is installed by default, so uninstall that shite. The Xbox app is installed by default and cannot be uninstalled, and same with SkyDrive, which is annoying. I believe there's registry hacks to get around that, but it's literally not even through the interface. If you're in the uninstall section of the system settings and you right click on it, the uninstall will either won't be there or will be grayed out. So it's almost impossible, unless you go into the registry, to uninstall all this shite. Again, I've been ranting on for about 5 minutes, but one final thing is, I will say Shut Up 10 is a third party app that literally goes in and he toggles most of these for you. Unfortunately, Windows Update sometimes reverses these things, but then if you open up Shut Up 10 again, it will say, oh, these have been reversed, you want to re-toggle them and get rid of them. And I think Shut Up 10 will disable SkyDrive if you don't like that appearing in your right-click menus or whatever, contextual menus. Okay, take a breath, and you guys feel free to jump in.
Yeah, it was just like, when we mentioned Windows 10, I was like, oh God, I haven't actually used Windows 10 in probably over a year. I don't know, like that, I consider that a good thing, like, because.
Very good thing.
I just find that, you know, I don't do very intensive things on my computer, and I don't really play games that often. So that's kind of, you know, there was a video editor I used to use before, and that only worked on Windows. But then I kind of discovered Linux applications, so it just replaced that, you know. So, I can understand the draw of Windows sometimes. Like, as much as we love Linux, as evidenced by my sound issues before we began recording this episode, Linux can be fussy when it wants to be. So, you know, sometimes when your back's against the wall, sometimes you kind of need to just go, you know, dance with the devil. It's not nice, and I wish we didn't have to do it sometimes, but unless we have the skills, like advanced Linux troubleshooting skills, which I do not, I can copy and paste commands from websites and paste them into a terminal. But beyond that, you know, I can only do so much. So if I just need it to work, sometimes you gotta go to Windows.
Yeah, but now we are all shitting ourselves that Connor's computer is gonna restart an update for next half an hour.
I really wish this audio interface did. I mean, as I said, I am dual booting, so one time I was, and the other version on the other part of my hard drive is Ubuntu 18.10. Remember, I was talking about my GNOME adventures, so that's what I've been doing. Was I was experimenting on GNOME on the other side of my hard drive as well. One time I was in there, and I was just messing around, and then I brought up Audacity, and I was like, wait, it's actually detecting this microphone. So as I said, it's kind of it's intermittent. So who knows, this microphone actually, maybe a later kernel update or something might have reactivated the compatibility or something. So I'm perfectly willing to just wipe Windows and go back and see what's the story. But, these are kind of my adventures in Windows so far.
Well, the way I see it, say the problem is that we don't have that kind of, a rich ecosystem of applications that are created, that are aimed at people who want to do something without knowing much about how it works technically. We have a lot of applications on Linux for experts or for like programmers and sysadmins. But if I wanted to, just by myself, record audio and make it sound good without me not even having the ears for it, there is no such thing that can do it for me, because Audacity, to me, just looking at Audacity is like looking into a cockpit of a space shuttle. I don't know what these buttons do, and I'm worried to press anything in case it explodes and fly off. So I think, and I hope that with the recent developments and getting more games and getting more developers and getting everybody into the Linux ecosystem, even though we are sacrificing a bit of the uniqueness because we are getting all the Electron apps and stuff, but hopefully there will be soon enough users for companies and small development shops to justify the expense and develop these little tools for Linux that we might not have to run Audacity, which is actually an expert tool. And it's a great expert tool, I'm sure, but it's not made for me. Maybe just something that has got a simple record button and with some very sane defaults that I can just press and it will record, and then I press stop and it will stop and save it as something then Shane can cut up and put together. So that's what I think about.
Yeah, Shane. What I was going to say was, it's not all negative. I mean, I'm perfectly willing to point out the positives in anything that I see. So the positive things that I noticed, just, I'm sure there's a lot more than this, but these are the ones that stood out to me, is it actually does have a good design. But then again, they're a big, massive corporation. They have a dedicated design team. So the kind of pixel perfect design and refinement and things like that you're going to expect from Microsoft, and you're going to expect that from Apple with their Mac OS as well. Some design teams on Linux, like the KDE design team and the GNOME design team, I may not agree with their aesthetics 100% of the time, but they're approaching that, getting close to that. But just the Windows on Microsoft, I'll get there eventually. They just have the resources to just say, okay, we have a dedicated design team, and maybe they have 20 people on that team where might only be one or two dedicated people on GNOME or whatever, maybe a team of five. I do not know the insides of any of these corporations, so these are wildly speculating.
Right, hold on. You actually like the way Windows 10 looks?
Yeah, I actually do. But I can get the design behind it.
Because to me, to be frank, I actually don't work with it, but I have to look in at it when we work with a colleague or something, and it looks to me that there are some very modern ideas and some ideas from 1990 and everything in between squashed together in, there's a lot of legacy stuff and a lot of it still looks like Windows 95. And I don't think there is, you look at Apple and or GNOME or KDE, and there is a design philosophy. Windows always looked disjointed to me, like that there was something, but it didn't matter as long as it was functional. And that's not necessarily, I sound like I'm slagging them. That's not necessarily a slag. That's just me saying that I think they have got different priorities over there, making everything work rather than just make it look pretty.
I mean, I've said several times on this podcast, I like Cinnamon because it reminds me of Windows. And I don't mean that in a as a a detriment to cinnamon at all. In fact, I think it's a compliment. It's just the fact that this is the way my brain works. I'm expecting the taskbar to be at the bottom. I'm expecting a menu that pops up with a search functionality. That's just the way my brain works, and I tend to get frustrated and for I'm trying to find stuff if it's not in that in those places. I'm not saying I can't. I mean, as I said, I've used GNOME, and GNOME is completely the opposite. So I can't use other things. It's just sometimes when you're tired and you just want things where you expect them to be. So I think that's the unfortunate thing of having grown up with the Windows usage paradigm all the way through 95, 98, or Windows 7 and so on. It's just cinnamon just reminds me of that. So when I was back on Windows 10, as I said, once they reduced the menu down and got rid of half the Candy Crush shite that's on it, it's perfectly usable as user interface. I mean, putting aside the privacy concerns and putting aside the fact that you don't think it's very efficient, and Linux is way more efficient on hardware, which I would happen to agree with. As I said, I want to be back on Linux. I don't want to be on Windows 10. It's just the fact that it's the freaking driver for my audio interface. And as I said, I'm dual booting and I'm constantly experimenting. So sometime when I'm dual booting and I'm on my Linux partition, I might find that bang, the latest update of whatever kernel it is, bang, now my audio interface is working and I could completely wipe it and wipe Windows and go just Linux full time. So this is just me just speaking objectively and saying I like the way that Windows is designed. I'm not saying do I think it's perfect. Far from it. There is a lot of legacy shit in there that just doesn't make any sense. And there's things that I prefer on Cinnamon than I do on Windows 10. As I said, I use Windows 10 in work constantly. And I'll be constantly... there's little things that will frustrate the shit out of me about the design of Windows 10. But it's just the basic usage paradigm of the start menu and being able to hit the Windows key or the super key and just start typing, and my eye just naturally goes down to the bottom left when I'm doing that. I'm not saying you can't hit the Windows key or the super key on GNOME and start typing. Of course you can, and it's right there in front of you. But it's just it's little things. As I said, it's entirely subjective.
Yeah, I mean, I totally agree with you on the taskbar front. It just makes sense to me. Maybe that's just a pattern that's been embedded into my brain just from my childhood using Windows. But yeah, whatever it is, that's what I like too. I think we have talked about Windows for about 15 minutes of this Linux podcast. So I think we shall move on to some Linux distro news. Mike, do you want to start us off there?
Oh, yeah, sure. So Fedora 30, which is the next release, I believe. Shit, I just forgot. Anyway, let's say it is for the purposes and intents of this discussion. They are going to get a Deepin desktop option. Now, you can install Deepin now, I think, but they are just going to make it official. Deepin is known to be basically sexy as fuck, and that's great because... We need that in the Linux ecosystem. It comes from, for those who do not know, it comes from the Deepin distribution out of China is also, I think, it's based on Ubuntu, and it's known to just look amazing. They take a little bit from
the Mac. It's based on Debian, isn't it?
Debian? You see?
I think it's a snapshot of Debian testing, but... Or is it SID or something?
I'm really good at spreading misinformation today. Thanks for catching this. So basically they look really good. They take good care into making things look so like pleasant to the eye and modern, with bit of the macOS vibe. And we will soon be able to install it on Fedora or get Fedora with it like properly official.
So you could say you could be diving deep in Fedora.
Oh no, you didn't.
You were just waiting for like a week to unleash that one, weren't you?
Yes. Speaking of Deepin, Deepin itself, the actual main project, not just the user interface. Well, I suppose it's the user interface, but it's coming from the Deepin project. Deepin 15.9 is now released with touchscreen support. So all of you people out there with your touchscreen laptops or your tablets or tablet convertibles or whatever, tab vertibles.
You just invented a new hard drive category.
Yeah. So touchscreen support is pretty interesting, especially since, as you said, Deepin is sexy as fuck. It's just, from an aesthetic point of view, it's just really well designed.
So this is actually pretty cool, because this is like something I was thinking of pretty recently, was I'd love to find, I don't even, like, it should be possible, but I just don't know where to find them, get an x86 tablet from China or something and put Linux on it, put a full fat Linux distro on it. But the touchscreen support was something I wasn't sure about. So is it just Deepin, or obviously there should be others? I mean, I'm assuming Ubuntu, Unity and whatnot has that.
GNOME is meant to be touch-friendly because of the big icons and the dashboard that goes all over the screen. So it's reminiscent of like your mobile operating system. And it's easily to touch up rather than, say, KDE or Cinnamon menu in the bottom corner, where you would need basically a stylus to touch it even on bigger screens. But I think there are specifically mobile for, well, basically there are now user interfaces being made specifically for the small mobile screens. So maybe some kind of a spin-off of that, like Plasma Mobile, might also be good for a tablet if you get one. If you are getting one, I think, unlike PCs where everything pretty much works, with the Windows tablets, because they would come with Windows, one has to be quite careful if it's even possible to install Linux, because I know, like, people would want to do that on the Surface tablets, and I know it's possible on the original one, but I'm not sure if it's possible on all of them.
Yeah, your mileage may vary on Surface tablets. I think as long as the generic Chinese tablet, x86 tablet that you buy, as long as it's pretty much just off the shelf Intel parts and it's pretty standard stuff, I think it should be okay. But if they're doing kind of real kind of custom stuff, and I don't mean custom stuff as expensive, sometimes it's just whatever the parts they have lying around or whatever parts the factory nearby them can give them in large quantities rather than ordering shit from America. So sometimes you might get weird hardware combinations in those tablets. But if it's just basically Intel everything, then it should be fine.
Yeah, so we'll move on to Chrome OS to add App Search to its launcher. Now that's interesting, actually. What is Chrome OS actually based on?
Gentoo.
Fucking hell.
Yeah, exactly.
No, which was my first reaction to that as well, was, well, maybe not fucking hell, but was,
no, I mean, fucking hell, way to spoil Gentoo, right?
As someone who's never used Gentoo, I can't really comment, but it's the kind of thing
I tried once.
This kind of thing
didn't go well.
It's the kind of thing of doesn't Gentoo already have its own package manager and isn't apt like Debian and Ubuntu? Why are you using a Debian and Ubuntu package manager on Gentoo?
Yeah, but the thing is that I don't think Google allow access to the Gentoo tools. They based off their distribution. They based Chrome OS off Gentoo, but I don't think you can use was it Portage or whatever they call it. You are only confined to the Chrome store to install software, and that's basically extensions for the browser. So you get, as far as I know, you get just whatever runs in Chrome. Plus, so this thing where you can install Linux applications and you can, you know, they've been headed in this direction for a while now, where you can basically get proper, in quotes, applications on the glorified browser operating system. That is a good thing, I think, because A, you give more people better tools. You I mean, you know, you can think of what you want about GIMP, but compared to some browser extension, it's always going to be more powerful. And they are giving Linux tools, or tools that are primarily based on Linux, into the hands of people who would never come across it. So I think it's a positive thing. Don't necessarily like Google, wouldn't ever buy a Chrome OS device, because why? But I like that they are doing this.
I think it's a good idea in the overall grand scheme of things.
Yeah. Next thing on the agenda there is, I heard about this one during the week, and I talked about it with someone in work at length. It's DuckDuckGo are using Apple Maps as their map provider. So when you search for maps on DuckDuckGo, it will serve you Apple Maps. Apparently, a little bit of a workaround. I don't know where I heard this, but I think it was in the Telegram. Yeah, if you switch to the dark theme, DuckDuckGo, they're still using OSM. So they obviously haven't made that switch in the thing. I don't know. but that's interesting, because I was talking to a guy in work, like a diehard Apple guy, follows all the conferences, all the keynotes, and he kind of convinced me. Like, he said that Apple Maps actually have a far better security and privacy record than Google. And I'd need to look into that a bit more before I believe them, but, you know, they have other problems as well that I don't like. But, maybe he has a point. Like, maybe Apple Maps is slightly better in the privacy dimension than Google is.
I've heard Steve Gibson, is it his name? Well, basically, I heard it on security podcasts from people who have got security reputation, talking about how Apple is better than Google in privacy. And of course, the business model also, like, Apple sells you overpriced stuff, Google is selling your data. That's how they make money. So, but the problem here wasn't that they would be replacing Google with Apple Maps. They are replacing OSM, as far as I know, OpenStreetMap. You know, we had that on two episodes back. And that's to me is a step in the wrong direction. Now, because you, at least from my point of view, I don't know how much better or worse Apple Maps are than OpenStreetMap, but privacy-wise, OpenStreetMap is always going to be better.
Oh, yeah, no question. But it's like, if you're going to dance with the devil, which devil do you dance with? That's what I was going for.
Apple, probably. Like, yeah.
I would agree. Apple tend to be more privacy facing, because it's just for the basic thing, as Shane was saying, is Apple sell you physical hardware products, as services a bit as well with their iCloud and all that malarkey. But it's basically where they make their money is physical hardware products. Whereas Google, it's your information that they're selling to advertisers. That's how they make their money. So Apple tend to be more privacy respecting.
I know they had that iCloud leak a few years ago, but other than that, I'm not sure.
Yeah, but I think that was that they got hacked rather than consciously sold your information or their customers' information. The thing is, I would rather see them using OpenStreetMap, but just I don't know how they make money. I know how they make money, because Connor shared in the Telegram the chart where they showed, but I don't think they are making enough, and this is probably why they have to sign a deal with one of the bigger ones, so that they can make more money, and so that we can keep having a search engine. Search engine.
What essentially is they broke down their revenue model is they do sell advertisements, but they're not targeted advertisements. In other words, if you go in DuckDuckGo and you search for a washing machine, and of course it's going to result in results saying a Wikipedia article about washing machines or whatever, but beside it will be ads from Amazon saying, do you wish to purchase a washing machine? And it's literally just returning the result it's just sending off your exact search term or whatever and the keywords to advertisements. It's not the, and then if you go back and then like the example that they gave is that has not been tracked. So if they contrasted it with Google, and sometimes they'll say, then Google's autocomplete. So it will start to form an opinion about you. In other words, if you do the same thing with Google, haven't done this, so this is just off the top of my head, but it'll say, want to buy a, and then it might say washing machine if it was Google, because it's already aware of your previous search term. Whereas DuckDuckGo doesn't track any of that. It will just want to buy a, and it will just do random results.
Yeah, and they won't sell your information to the highest bidder. Yeah, I am sad about them not using OpenStreetMap, but I understand that they have to make a living. So it's hard. It's in this stupid advertising supported economy. So
yeah, obviously I prefer they use OpenStreetMap, but with Apple Maps, yeah, as you said, it could be just a financial thing, but I'm also curious with Apple's, what do Apple stand to gain? And I was kind of thinking that maybe it's good for Apple because they're basically just taking a dump in Google's backyard, because that's their competitor. So I know Google doesn't really have anything to do with this, but yeah, I think, you know, them, you know, maybe they're just trying to find their partners, kind of, because Google has a lot of shit wrapped up in terms of search.
Can I just one last thing, just one more thing, for hey, people hey. Obvious, yeah, for people who want to keep using DuckDuckGo and OpenStreetMap without having to switch to the dark team, you can just do bang or exclamation point, as we call it in Europe, OSM, and then your search term, and it will still use OpenStreetMap for the search rather than Google Maps. Apple Maps.
Yeah, I think we should call on everyone to do that. Just let's just flood DuckDuckGo with like not using Apple Maps, if you want to, I guess.
So the next one item on our list is Purism are going to create a store for their mobile and PC operating systems, which is an interesting proposition. I didn't even know they were working on this, but as soon as I heard it, I'm like, yep, that sounds like a good thing.
Yeah. It's pretty cool actually, because it means the project is getting a bit more real. I saw a brief screenshot, and it looked a brief screenshot. I got a brief glance of a screenshot, and it looked very Android like, I have to say, like not a huge departure from the status quo in terms of UI anyway, but there was very little in the screenshot, I guess, so remains to be seen.
Yeah, I hope they take it off the ground, and I hope there will be a third alternative to iOS and Google. Having store is the one thing, and it's obviously important. Having something to fill the store with is another matter. So ideally, and this is just probably me wishful thinking, definitely I've never heard anybody suggesting this from them, but ideally I would see that you can install, and I don't know if it's possible, you could install Android apps via the store as well, or maybe not necessarily the Google Play ones, but maybe you could,
like F-Droid.
Yeah, like if you could use F-Droid repositories, or just sideload APKs through the store, because that's gonna be the thing in the success of the Librem phone is it going to have applications?
One thing I was going to say is I think it's called Anbox, and it was developed by Ubuntu or Canonical when they were working on their Ubuntu Touch in order to do that, and then I think the Anbox project just became its own thing, so you could use Anbox. That's on the phone side of things. One thing that I was just saying, if it was on the PC or a PC operating system side of things, like your laptop or your desktop, is that store, is if they could collaborate with Elementary, with their Elementary store, because I think Elementary are actually doing quite well with their store, as in they've a nice revenue model going on, as in they're kind of prompting, it's quite prompting, like, do you want to pay for this app? And then you have a slider and you can say, no, I'm on the financial rocks at the moment and I can't afford it, but I might donate later, or that kind of thing. And Maybe if you don't donate or don't pay for it that time, if there's a major update, it'll say you didn't donate this time or last time, but don't want to throw a developer a fiver or tenner or whatever this time, and then for the update or whatever. So if they, I don't know if they have been approaching the elementary team about replicating anything like that for Purism, but certainly that'll be an interesting collaboration if they ever do that.
I'm just skimming through the article on Foronix about this, and they don't mention, as far as I can say, they don't mention monetization. They just say that they want basically convergent App Store with applications that quote just works regardless of which device they are running in. So even the applications will be convergent, so you can run them both on a laptop, and then they do some big 15-inch laptops and a small mobile phone. So they will have to develop that in-house, because as far as I know, there's nothing like that in the Linux world, and not necessarily even anywhere else.
Yeah, an idea sprung to mind while you were, I think it was when someone was talking about sideloading APKs, which would be a great feature, but it actually raises the idea of perhaps, because Purism obviously have a different mission to company, like to Android or Apple, you know, so maybe they're a lot more open to this, but like a sort of meta app store. So what you could have is a bunch of like independent ecosystems that are, excuse the term, federated. And that's a cool word these days, right? But yeah, no, seriously, they would be federated. So it would be basically like a meta app store, which sounds like the way forward to me, because we can't, you know, we have to kind of share protocols at some point. We all can't keep having things that only work in one place. Like, it's just not going to work.
That's actually a very good point. I mean, we are already seeing parts of this when you can have one app store, like the GNOME Software Center or the Discover store, and it has got multiple backends. It works with whatever your package manager is, plus snaps, plus Flatpaks. As well, I think that's already the right path, I would say. With the APKs, you would have to get them from somewhere. So maybe a repository like FDroid would work. Yeah.
If we're all out of puff on this topic, maybe it's time to move on to the feedback section, which segues quite nicely, considering we were talking about DuckDuckGo. This is another alternative to Google search. It's called Quant, I want to believe, which is Q-W-A-N-T. It was suggested by Marcus via email, and I have checked it out, and it actually does look quite cool, quite compelling. I think they have a beta, which is a music search, so you're able to search music and that sort of thing. They don't... I think they actually have a bit of a maps search, so they're kind of constantly working on it as well. And I believe they do have a light version, which is the equivalent of your JavaScript free version for your DuckDuckGo, Mike.
Yeah, that's one thing that I've started pretty much not full time, because I work on something else, but at home I mostly use the Pinebook, which is under power, so I switch JavaScript. So the JavaScript free version of DuckDuckGo is massively helpful there. And if Quant have got that as well, then I'm definitely going to try it. I like the fact that it's, I think it is, that's the European one, right? Where
it's
where,
French.
Yeah. Something in origin, that's, anyway. Yeah, something that's like complies with the European Union's or the European view of on privacy, and is not necessarily a tool that takes these things seriously is massively important. And I know DuckDuckGo is that as well, even though they are from the United States, but the more the merrier here.
I definitely agree, the more the merrier.
So I think it's time for some 2019 boners. The first boners of the year on January 16th, is it?
No, I think you find it's January the
18th.
Okay, so it took us 18 days to get a boner.
That's a long election.
But I'll start you off there, Connor. What have you Sounding.
So we won't be releasing this on the 18th, but we're recording it on the 18th. But my first one is actually what we're using right now, which is SimpleNote. It was something that I have been come across in the past, just haven't used it that often. And then when I started using it, I was like, whoa, this is actually quite useful. And I thought it was actually negative in the freedom dimension. I just thought it was something that was kind of simple, easy to use, cross-platformers in Windows, Mac, and Linux. But I thought it was all locked up in privacy in its own kind of proprietary bullshit. And I was like, okay, it's a very useful app, but I don't know about the back end. And then found out, oh wait, it's on GitHub, so it's actually positive in the freedom dimension. And I think Mike, you discovered there's actually GPL2 as well.
The applications, definitely. I'm not sure about the server side, but. I'm not sure. I don't actually know.
Yeah, I think it's the case with the with Telegram as well. Is Telegram? It's the application is GPL3, I believe, but the server side is proprietary.
Yeah, I don't know. It's possible. It's all open source, or free software, or whatever you want to call it. And yeah, Wikipedia doesn't have the whole. But basically, we don't know at this point whether SimpleNote is fully open source. There is an API, but we will have the rest of this information for you, dear listeners, in the next episode.
Show notes or the next episode.
I can put in the nizzles.
A bonus one was because I was listening back to our Christmas special of the last season, is you guys all had boners of the year, and I realized that I actually didn't put one in. So my belated boner of the year for 2018 is actually Steam Play and Proton, which is that whole thing that was developed by Valve and the developers of Wine, which are the name escapes me at the moment.
Crossover, isn't it?
Crossweaver.
Code Weavers.
That's the one. We got there eventually. So my belated boner of the year for 2018 is Steam Play and Proton, drawn by both Valve and Code Weavers.
Yeah, that's a good one. My first erection of the year goes to Double Commander. So since I was switching from KDE to GNOME,
and it's not a double entendre.
No, it's a command, not entendre. Since I was switching to GNOME, I thought about switching my favorite tool, which is a dual pane file manager. And I thought that I will quickly look around and then go back to Crusader, because Crusader is amazing, and I didn't think I would find anything to match it. And I have to say that so far, Double Commander proved to be pretty much as good. I'm not fully there with it yet, because there are some workflows and shortcuts that I haven't yet discovered that might be there or might not to fully bring it up to the standard of the Crusader functionality. But it's surprisingly good, because I didn't know there were two of these tools on such a good level in Linux. I should have thought. I mean, that's the kind of things Linux does very well, dual pane file managers. But Double Commander is amazing.
Excellent. My boner is, I should preface this by saying I've been going through a bit of a weird kind of Linux renaissance or something lately. Like, I've started just going back to basics with a lot of things and not getting too involved in the latest shit. So what I've rediscovered recently is GIMP, because I started doing thumbnails for the episodes we're putting on YouTube, shameless plug. And it strikes me, it's one of those rare Linux programs that's actually quite easy to just pick up and use without really knowing anything about it. Everything just kind of makes sense, and you can tooltip on everything and you see exactly what it does. The default menus kind of give you whatever you need. You have to consult the wiki once in a while, but you know, most things just make sense. So it's pretty cool that you can just pick up and use it. I had some brief training in Photoshop like about 11 or 12 years ago when I was in college the first time. And like I had like, I don't know, like 10 classes or some shit. Like it was very basic and it was like Photoshop CS2 then. It was ages ago. So yeah, but I was still able to like map my knowledge from that to GIMP because it's actually kind of similar to the old Photoshop. What do you guys think?
I'm of the opinion, just like Mike, when he's approached with Audacity, is the whole thing of GIMP is like, oh shit, oh shit, oh shit, there are so many options. So for you saying, it's actually simple and quite intuitive. I'm thinking the complete and utter opposite. But then again, I'm not from a design background, so it's probably a bit overwhelming for me. The only bit of creative editing I ever do is one of my hobbies is photography. I dabble in it occasionally. I'm not saying I do it regularly, like once every couple of months, whenever the feeling takes me. And so I would do more photo editing, which you can do in GIMP. But it's more kind of image manipulation. So GIMP is to Photoshop, kind of like a photo editor like Lightroom would be more suited, or the equivalent would be Darktable, or what's the KDE equivalent? Digicam, that's the one. There would be more into photo editing, but you can do photo editing in GIMP as well.
Yeah, I am pretty much I'm not a photographer, and I don't even know what to look for when I edit photos. So GIMP for me is just because I can't figure any other damn way how to resize a picture. I know my way around, maybe Inkscape better than GIMP, because that I can understand. I'm not good at it, but I know what it does. But layers and HDR and, whatever else is there, that's like not my thing. I don't know. If you can show me a process photo and a not process photo, and I won't be able to tell you which one is which. So, you know, I appreciate it is there, and I think it's important. I hope to shit that one day somebody will rename it, because like, yeah, what is it? It's GIMP. It's going to shoot your balls off.
It's the GNU Image Manipulation Project. Or program or
yeah,
something.
It is the GNU image manipulation program, but for fuck's sake, come on. I'm not usually into branding, but this is bad. This is real bad. But whenever I discover like a that one of the easiest things like GwenView or some other small picture shower can actually also crop a photo, that's enough for me. But I am happy that there is GIMP and that people can use it and to do their work on Linux, obviously.
There's Shotwell and there's a couple of other really simple just photo organizers to do some very basic editing. I think Shotwell, you can do things like in the background of like adjust your exposure on the there's a slider and say, oh, that's overexposed, I'm going to bring it down a bit. And then, yeah, that's fine, save.
You see, that's already too much for me, because you have to open a project, then it wants you to, I don't know if Shotwell, did you come do that, but it wants to reorganize your photo. I just want to, you know, cut a picture in half or something. But
No, Shotwell is actually more simple than you're giving it credit for. It's not like you have to open up a new project. Those are my photos, point at that folder, and then it displays them all. And then as you're going through the thumbnail, like down at the bottom, it's like, do you want to adjust the exposure? And you can ignore that, or you can click on it if you want. Or if you want to, or like there'll be options like crop this photo or something like that. It's pretty easy to do.
I think we're coming up on the hour mark, so I think we should begin wrapping this baby up. I just wanted to, we always forget to mention these, so I'll go through our socials and our contacts and all that. We're on Evil Facebook, we're on Evil Twitter, we're on Evil YouTube now. We're on all the evils. So, you know, everyone can shout at us on Telegram. You're right too, it's fine. And then, And then what else are we on now? Well, we obviously have the Telegram group, linuxlads.com/telegram.
We are on Mastodon, but it's not very active. We have a Matrix chat. It's not active at all. It's still there. Where else are we? Is there anything else that we are not on?
Yeah, I know. It's hard to keep track.
Yeah, no, essentially we do set things up as in Mastodon and Matrix and these sorts of things. If you find us there, kind of ping us on it. But it's the kind of thing of we will keep wherever our audience is. So it's up to you, the audience, to as to what we keep and what we end up discarding because nobody's using it. So Telegram seems to be active enough. Twitter, I seem to get kind of decent interactions on Twitter. So it's
Facebook is basically just dead. Like nobody really adds us on Facebook.
It's that's where the audience is. So it's kind of we're putting our episodes out to the most eyes possible, even if the interactions of those posts is not the best. It's the kind of thing of we're showing ourselves to the masses, that kind of thing. I think Mike, you're saying you had a couple of good interactions on Mastodon as well, so Mastodon seems to be quite good.
Yeah, I mean, it obviously takes a better person than me. I'm quite antisocial and anti-media, so I'm probably not the best person to talk about with other people.
Anyway, so that's our socials. Our contact is we're on linuxlads.com is our main webpage. show@linuxlads.com is our email address.
That's the one I was forgetting. Okay, before the contact section turns into its own discussion topic, I think we should all say goodbye. Thanks for listening as always. I've been Shane.
I have been Connor.
Yeah, okay.
And we are the Linux Lads. See you later.
Bye.
Bye.